This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Good Monday morning to everyone. It's Packer and Durham. It's summertime, and the ACC is rocking in Omaha. We got a ton to talk about on this Monday show. The number is 844-SAY-ACCN as we continue to stream live on the ESPN app. You've got us on SiriusXM Channel 371 and an assortment of other terrestrial radio stations. I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. Hope everybody had a wonderful Father's Day weekend. And Wes, we have a lot to talk about this Monday morning.
Well, I tell you, Saturday afternoon, NC State delivered the goods, right? Beating Stanford in their game one of the College World Series out in Omaha. And then yesterday afternoon, arguably one of the hottest teams in baseball coming into the College World Series, got their bats shoved in the freezer by Andrew Abbott and Matt Wyatt in Virginia as the Cavaliers shut out Tennessee. So the ACC is 2-0 after 2 days of the College World Series. Winner's bracket game tonight with North Carolina State meeting Vanderbilt at 7 o'clock over on ESPN. Pack, the emotions yesterday with Virginia poured out really early in the ball game when Logan Michaels' home run staked the Cavaliers to a 1-0 lead. And then the storylines and everything else that started to develop. But this home run right here, his first of the season, opened the door to kind of like Virginia's confidence. And I thought Andrew Abbott was a stud yesterday. I mean, Tennessee, yeah, they got guys on base early in the game, threatened a handful of times, and every time Andrew Abbott and the guys playing behind him found a way to shut the door on them, to be honest. So congratulations to Brian O'Connor and the Cavaliers, who, by the way, added three more in the seventh and just looked really good in the process in winning 6-0 yesterday against Tennessee.
Brian O'Connor will join us from Omaha later in the show during the Power Hour. It was just a great team win. I mean, Virginia played terrific defense. Yep. You mentioned Abbott. I thought they set the tone early when Tennessee had runners on the court. It seemed like Tennessee had a guy on third base with less than two outs for the vast majority of the first half of that game, and they just could not get a hit. And by the way, the wind was blowing out, according to the announcers yesterday. And Tennessee, with that great offensive team, just could not score. But Andrew Abbott was out of sight. 10 strikeouts, 13 for the game for the Hoos. You know, Wyatt comes in and does a great job, as usual. We're still waiting for the big donkey to show up. We hadn't seen him. He's been great on social media, eating Dippin' Dots out there. But we've not seen Stephen Schock do his thing. But for Virginia, you could not have scripted a better start. Shut out. Tennessee had been playing lights out. All this swagger, you know, we heard about, and they are a really good club. I mean, all these teams are good. But for Virginia to pitch the shutout and now kind of playing from a position of strength, if you will. Listen, they lost the first game of the regional in Columbia, South Carolina, found a way to win it, lost the first game of the Super Regional, came back to take care of the series. Now here they are. They win the first game, right? They go now, what, 3-0 all time on Father's Day at the College World Series. And doing the job. And again, if you're Coach O'Connor, you're sitting back going, man, you know what? We rested our bullpen. We get another day's rest. Yeah, you'll take on a really good Mississippi State team who struck out, what, 2016 Texas Longhorns last night. So you got a lot of ACC-SEC matchups in the winner's bracket tonight and tomorrow night. But for Virginia, a fantastic start. And, man, they get to Omaha and they win. You know, we keep talking about the ACC's ills in Omaha. Well, Virginia may be the exception to the rule, Wes. They won it all in 2015, and they get comfortable in that place. They, you know, they're so used to the grind of a game, and it really was. They were dodging bullets all day yesterday. First inning, fifth inning, sixth inning, Tennessee threatening with runners on the corner, scoring position. They went 0-for-8 at the plate with runners in scoring position. But Virginia's pitching, which has been a strength, continues to showcase that. And man, I tell you what, the ACC 2-0 in Omaha. I think you could not have scripted a better case scenario for the league.
Yeah, you take the, for all the reputation college baseball's had this year with home runs and big innings and things like that, you take the two starting pitchers of the winning teams yesterday, Virginia and Mississippi State last night, you saw basically 25 strikeouts, I think, between those two starting pitchers, Pack. In addition, you throw in the others, you probably had close to three dozen by the time the ball game was over last night in the two wins by both the Cavaliers and the Bulldogs. But back to Virginia. The story of Logan Michaels. We told you the home run yesterday to stake the Cavaliers to the lead. Opened up the book on the emotional story about Michaels and his dad on Father's Day, of course. It literally played to the script that here's Michaels hitting this home run, and his dad, who 3 years ago was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, was there. His dad ultimately gets the ball that Logan hit out. So after the game, Logan talked about it.
When I hit that, I instantly, when I went over the fence, I started thinking about my dad and how it's like, I mean, one of the most special moments we could share together. And I mean, I was sitting in the dugout after it happened. I got pretty emotional. And no, it's just for him to be here for what he went through in the past, just for him to be here and be able to see that. I mean, I couldn't have asked for anything more. And it's just a really special moment. There's no words for it. Just for someone to bring him the home run ball, and then obviously for it to happen on Father's Day at the College World Series, I mean, definitely a special moment for our family and for my dad and I.
That is joy right there. That's the definition of joy and love right there. How good is that? Father's Day, going yard, first one of the year, crazy. Baseball is a wonderful thing, man. I'm telling you, it's such a great sport. Awesome.
And dad gets the ball in the seats. Unbelievable. Brian O'Connor also back after the ball game, talking about Logan Michaels' performance. Not only the home run, but another couple hits behind that. He ends up having a heck of a day for the Cavaliers.
There was a time 3 years ago that I didn't know Logan Michaels would show up to campus. Because of what he was dealing with his father. And he decided to come. He was encouraged by his parents to be here. You know, these players that wear our uniform, they look to us as coaches and administrators, as leaders that are looking out for their best interests. So, and care for them. That's what this is about. Right? Lots to be made about home runs and guys rising up and going on to the professional baseball. But when it comes down to it in its simplest form, it's about caring for young people.
Spot on. Coach is 100% right. That was just great stuff yesterday. It really was. And here, you know, here's Virginia. Tennessee comes rolling in there. They had 16 home runs in their five home games. During the regional and super regional, and all of a sudden you get in a big ballpark. And we talked about that, you know. That's a large yard. And you play in a little bandbox and hitting that thing left and right. All of a sudden you see some pitching like you get from Virginia. It could get frustrating. I thought Tennessee got frustrated as the day went on because it was almost like Virginia was teasing him with the carrot. Like, hey, why don't you come hit this thing? Come hit this thing. They couldn't hit it. Simply couldn't. And I know Ben McDonald kept talking about the wind blowing out. I can be blowing out 800 miles an hour. But if you can't hit it, it doesn't matter which way the wind's blowing. But that was just great pitching. Yeah. And you mentioned the pitching last night. We saw 34 Ks between Virginia and Mississippi State.
Is that right?
Yesterday.
Wow.
34.
Wow.
13 and 21 is 34. So, again, we keep talking about the long yard ball. You know, everybody's going yard. That's cool. But at the end of the day, great pitching, great defense. I'll sign up for that every day of the week.
And it's also funny to me how the storyline in college baseball this year has been the runs, right? The ball and the runs and, you know, the way pitching, it's either been strikeout or home run. And here really through the first 2 days of the College World Series, I guess we haven't seen a game get away from anybody. Extra innings with Vanderbilt in Arizona the first couple days. But what's it been about? It's been about the arms again, right, Pac? And how many times since they moved downtown to TD Ameritrade from old Johnny Rosenblatt Stadium has it come back to pitching? And it comes back to the ballpark. Yeah, it's a bigger ballpark than Rosenblatt. But it comes back to arms. And it always seemingly does, especially in the opening weekend of the College World Series every year, right?
Well, I mentioned to Mike Rooney when we had him on the show on Friday that there have been 381 home runs hit in the 123 games of the NCAA baseball tournament. And if you were glued to the set to watch baseball Saturday and Sunday, yeah, we had a couple. There were a couple shots, but, you know, maybe a handful. But it wasn't like the Super Regional when people were playing at home. Mm-hmm. That is just a very, very big place. And, you know, you throw in 23,000 people watching you in the center stage of, hey, we've made it to Omaha. I think the pressure and all of a sudden you reach right, you know, I mean, get, hey, we're falling behind. I thought Tennessee panicked yesterday, quite frankly. They just got in a sense that they were so used to pounding it. And right. Abbott was so good. Change in speeds, location. Again, 10 Ks, six innings and pitched. And, you know, great pitching, great defense is just the ultimate equalizer to hot bats. And you saw that on display without question yesterday in a 6-0 game and a 2-1 game last night. If you stayed up to watch that. So we'll see what happens, though, moving forward, because Vanderbilt, NC State tonight, I can assure you, as hot as NC State is, and they are smoking, especially away from Raleigh, and we'll talk about the Wolfpack here momentarily,
right.
But Vanderbilt's got great arms. And I know Rocker got lit up a little bit by Arizona, giving up 3 in the first, but Leiter goes tonight, and if you've not seen him pitch, you will, and you're going to see him pitch in Major League Baseball eventually. This will be a great test tonight with NC State. And for Virginia, hey, they jump on Mississippi State. Like I said, we got a little combination of winter bracket, ACC, SEC tomorrow night and tonight. So if you love your baseball, college variety, doesn't get much better than this coming up.
By the way, Andrew Abbott, best ACC performance in Omaha in 27 years. Last time an ACC pitcher did what Andrew Abbott did yesterday was Georgia Tech's Bragg Rigby. Abbott went and had 10 Ks and no runs in a College World Series game. That's the first time since Rigby beat Cal State Fullerton in 1994, which was Danny Hall's first year coaching Georgia Tech, to show you just kind of the history in that deal. But before we get to the break, Brian Ives, who does a lot for us, segment producer, content, research, all sorts of things, comes up with Charlotte Hornets and Carolina Panthers tweets for Packer occasionally. Brian Ives laid this one on us yesterday. Virginia's win over Tennessee leaves the ACC 18-16 against the SEC in baseball this year. All other conferences are a combined 71-262 against the SEC this season. There you go.
I don't believe I heard that stat on the air this weekend. Did you, Wes? I don't believe I heard that at all. Not one single time. Did you? Because I watched a lot of baseball. No, maybe they snuck that in during the break and I didn't hear it. But I have not heard – now, I've heard a lot about one league being how great they are, but I've not heard that stat right there before. Maybe that'll get mentioned tonight. What do you think? Think so? Maybe.
I hope so, yeah. We can send that. We'll put that in a tweet and get it to KP maybe.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Just saying.
Oh, man. All right. When we continue, we will dive into the Wolfpack's win over the Cardinal on Saturday. Kind of a weird ending on the fourth slide play, but nonetheless, NC State gets the job done, and Reed Johnston looked fantastic for the Wolfpack and his start out in Omaha. But we got a full show, too. Two-a-days, Pack. Two-a-days continue. Adam Lucas will be here to help us break down North Carolina coming up at 7:30. Joe Giglio will return to Packer and Durham. We'll talk a little College World Series with Giglio, but also get his thoughts on Dave Doran and the Wolfpack. Bennett Conlon will be here from the Charlottesville Daily Progress, an update. He wrote a fabulous story about Logan Michaels and his dad. We'll add to the storyline yesterday's Virginia game. And Brian O'Connor, as Pack said, at 9:15. It also appears that Dr. Mark Emmert is going to make one last ditch name, image, and likeness play before July 1.
Well, thank God.
All that
thank
more.
God he sent out that memo Friday, because I felt better about the whole situation. I could sleep at night Friday night knowing that Dr. Emmert said, hey, if you don't take care of it, I will. Yeah, you got it, Doc. We're good to go. Goodness gracious. What are we doing?
Got an opening cup of coffee. We're right at 7:15 Eastern Standard Time. We're delighted to have you with us on the Monday edition of Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. We hope you'll be with us on the other side. NC State, a big winner on Saturday. Wolfpack beat the Cardinal, and now they draw Vanderbilt tonight. Packer and Durham's Monday rolls on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham is presented by New York Life, helping people act on their love for over 175 years. The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham presented by New York Life. ACC rolling so far in Omaha. So far, so good. But two big matchups coming up tonight and tomorrow. And the Wolfpack, though, front and center. And how about NC State just laying the wood to the Cardinal, right? Pac-12, really impressive start for those guys. But, man, NC State, the Wolfpack had six runs before Stanford decided to get a hit. And Elliott Avance guys now, Wes, listen, those boys get away from Raleigh, North Carolina. They're dangerous. They went down to Ruston, Louisiana, no problem. They go to Fayetteville, no problem. And they come rolled into Omaha, and the Wolfpack is hot. They really are. And it's going to be a great matchup tonight against Slider and Vanderbilt.
You know, Pac, when you think about where NC State is, they are seven and one since losing to Duke in the ACC championship game. I mean, they lost the opening game to Arkansas, won the other two. They took four games to win the sub-regional, right, in Ruston. And then they won the other day. And the final the other day, I mean, get the early home run. I'm a firm believer if you score early in Omaha in the opening round of the College World Series, it buoys your team's – it's almost like a relief, right? And, man, when we saw NC State get on the board early Saturday, I thought that was a huge, huge boost for not only Elliott Avent, but maybe for Reed Johnston too. When Johnny Butler dumps it in the seats in right field, that thing got out, by the way. And then the hits just keep on coming for NC State. Butler goes and has a day, five RBIs. But he had some help, too. NC State did what NC State's been doing really the last month of the year, with the exception of the ACC championship game against Duke on that Sunday in Charlotte.
Tell you what else they've done a good job doing, and that's beating the SEC. Because if you remember, they went to Ruston, and they jumped on Alabama for the very first game, a team that we talked about had no business being in the tournament while Pitt was sitting at home, and Alabama didn't last long. Compliments to NC State. And then what NC State did in Fayetteville, knocking off the number one team in college baseball, Arkansas, doing something that not a single SEC team was able to do all year, and that's win a series against the Hogs. Well, they eliminated them with the best player in baseball on the hill. So tonight, they get a chance to continue their SEC tour against Vanderbilt. I mentioned Leiter is fantastic for the Commodores, but NC State's kind of been there, done that. At least it feels that way. And you know, on the road, away from home, this is what's been so impressive about them. Not only did they get off to a lousy start, but they've had to do it uphill all year. They've gone on the road and taken care of business, Wes. Look at these numbers. I mean, this is almost like, let me rub my eyes a second. This is not at home. This is away from home. Away from home.
Right.
Crazy good.
Yeah, it is nuts. 23-6. You see the runs. The run differential is crazy too, right? I mean, you see 5-1 on the road in the NCAA tournament.
Everything about this is impressive. And, you know, you're doing it in the second half of the season when you had to play well because you got off to such a terrible start. Pressure was on. Hey, a lot of expectations. This team, a lot of folks said, maybe the most talented in the conference. Lousy start, pressure to get back. They battled back, and now it's almost like, hey, they're playing with house money. Let's just go have fun. And I think you're spot on in terms of the early runs in that game against Stanford. Once they broke the ice, it was like, okay, let's take a deep breath and go play. And poor Stanford, like I said, they're down six before they got their first hit, and that was over. And another impressive important performance by NC State. And again, I can't emphasize enough, this game tonight, whoever wins these games tonight and tomorrow, if you can get up 2-0 in Omaha, man, you have positioned yourself like nobody's business. You sit back, relax, go get some Zestos and a whiskey steak, and you chill and grill and let everybody else go fight it out. And then by the time you show back up at the ballpark All you got to do is win one, and you're in the College World Series Championship Series. So this is huge tonight and tomorrow night. But, man, NC State fans should be pumped because Elliott's got his guys playing great.
Yeah, I think that what has transpired out there is a lot about confidence and a lot about momentum. NC State and Virginia are two teams that, and the storylines have been discussed. We've done it a lot here, and it was chronicled again over the weekend. The fact this is a continuation of the way both these schools have played kind of the second halves of their years, Pac, I think really speaks to the makeup of their coaches and kind of who their coaches are. Brian O'Connor will be with us at 9:15, as you said. And I think that's one of the things we always have to keep in mind is you got two veteran guys. O'Connor, 18 years. Elliott, 20-some-odd years. Now 25, I guess it is. And they've done a remarkable job of piecing this stuff together. And now they've got belief on their team. And that belief came from what they did in the second half, but also what they've done in the regional. Virginia's story, the elimination games and things like that. Well, now with NC State, 8 years removed from their last College World Series appearance, the Wolfpack went out there and played with a tremendous amount of confidence the other day. And it was good to see Reed Johnston deliver the goods on Stanford. That was a critical, critical question coming in because of what had happened in the Super Regional against Arkansas, right? So now you go get Justice to close it behind Johnston, and all of a sudden you've used two guys. You've used two guys. You still got Villeman. You still got a boatload of guys that you can throw out there tonight if it gets a little sideways and a little tricky during the ball game with the Commodores at 7 o'clock.
And, of course, you mentioned Vanderbilt having to win in extras against Arizona. And when you take a snapshot of what's going on so far in Omaha, you had two unseeded teams, and then you had teams seeded 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 9. Well, here we are on Monday, and it's summertime, and we've already had weekend games, and the two unseeded teams have W's. Teams seeded number 2 right. and number 3 in the country have L's, including team number 5. So 2, 3, and 5 got L's, and the two unseeded teams got W's. Well, the two unseeded teams would be NC State and Virginia. And so the ACC... Yep. As I said earlier in the first segment, could not have scripted a better weekend start. Now you get ultimate test, as I mentioned, with a little ACC-SEC tonight and tomorrow night. So if you're a college baseball junkie, man, this week coming up is awesome. And can't wait. Right. I mean, I love it. I can keep telling you, it's my favorite tournament. Favorite tournament.
All right. You mentioned Jack Leiter tonight. Real quick, just to give you an idea and comparatives here. Vanderbilt had to go into the night to get Arizona, right?
Extras.
Now that's a pretty tough Arizona team, by the way. That was quite a ball game. In fact, of the four, that was a heck of a game.
Yep.
So here's a look at kind of where Tim Corbin, the former Clemson assistant to Jack Leggett, has his kind of pitching staff. They ended up using four guys the other night. Remember, NC State just went with the two. Rocker 5 2/3, Maldonado, Murphy, McIlvain. Now all of a sudden they get Jack Leiter tonight. How much does that impact Vanderbilt? We'll see after a day off. But Commodores need Jack Leiter to step up. Now remember, Leiter is plenty capable. In fact, there's Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter discussions all over Music City trying to figure out which one's better than the other. The one thing we have to hope, Pac, tonight, is that Vanderbilt does not wear the Mark Packer uniform of the weekend.
Those are brutal.
From Saturday night.
Those are brutal.
Huh? Come on. You liked those, didn't you? You're a big fan?
The Vandy boys are really good. I really respect Corbin. I really like him, and their program is fantastic. And they're going to throw Leiter on you tonight, and Leiter's the real deal. Like I said, you're going to see him in Major League Baseball. But those uniforms right there remind me that this is the college baseball version of the Pittsburgh Steelers throwback Hamburglar unis. Now, listen, I am not a fashionista. I'm not. But there are just some baseball uniforms that don't work. And I respect Vanderbilt's talent, but that look to me just doesn't get it. Now, those are as ugly as the Whistler making your ears bleed during a broadcast. That's the only thing. The only thing I've got against Vanderbilt is when I have to watch them on television, I got to put the mute button on because that whistling thing drives me crazy. I'm sorry. Drive me crazy. If I had to go to a game and the Whistlers were there, I may have to go all Phoenix Suns, Suns in four. I have to go Suns in four guy on that guy.
Suns in four.
I mean, God, you make it. Come on, dude. Just sit there and grab some popcorn, eat a hot dog, just be quiet for a couple innings. Go grab a Coke, do something, except whistle. But it's going to be great tonight. I can't wait for the games this week. Love it.
7 o'clock tonight, Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, Kyle Peterson, Chris Budden on the coverage over on ESPN for Vanderbilt and NC State. By the way, great to have the band all back together today for Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life, including Drew Brooks, who's returned from helping John Rahm read putts to help his Sun Devil.
Tell you what,
read the win the U.S. Open yesterday.
That U.S. Open, so Drew's down back. The stretch. Oh, John Rahm put it on him yesterday, didn't he? There was a stretch yesterday in the U.S. Open. For about
rest of them look like us, Pack.
I was getting ready to say, rest of them look. I haven't hit a bad shot in 24 years. I've got some of those shots right now. You can drop a ball out in the middle of the 12th fairway, and I've got some of those shots. I was watching from the world's best yesterday. We saw shanks, dudes hitting trees. We got guys four putting. There was some serious nonsense going on at Torrey Pines yesterday afternoon, but that was good stuff, too. This is a great Father's Day weekend.
Yeah.
It really was. Awesome.
It was. Indeed. Step aside. When we come back, two-a-days, Adam Lucas makes a triumphant return to the Packer and Durham program presented by New York Life. Writer for GoHeels.com, co-host of the Inside Carolina podcast, Carolina Insider, rather. He'll be here to talk about the Tar Heels and Sam Howell and what else we're looking for. Phil Longo, in case you missed it, behind Adam, next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Welcome to Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
There's Chester D right there.
There he is.
Looking for yabbits or a treat. One way or the other. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Great. All right. Welcome back.
He's got the...
It's crazy.
Chester's got the summer cut, though, right now. He doesn't quite look as shaggy as he does in the New York Life promo there. So there he is on the Roger Goodell chair.
Look at that.
Now, that's the, not the boys, even close. I will tell you, the boys are a little sluggish today because I made a road trip Saturday morning right after talking to Dan Dockich on SiriusXM to go to Lexington Barbecue to load up for the weekend, and I took some back to Bill and Barb. And you know the boys love them some barbecue now. You get Lexington Barbecue. Wes, it was spectacular. Hush puppies, barbecue slaw, a couple pounds chopped. They were out of apple
wax
pies.
Wax paper pies?
No, they were out of the wax paper pies. But Lexington Barbecue, that's my go-to. Man, I don't care far away it is. I'm going. All right, let's road trip. Speaking of road trips.
Let's go live to the Triangle. Adam Lucas joins Packer and Durham from the GoHeels.com site. Co-host of the Carolina Insider podcast with Jones Angel. You can go online now and vote for the Potties, by the way, Pack, if you want to participate, if you're so inclined. You can go on for vote for their year-end awards of all their pod guests. So there you go. It's, by the way, heavily subscribed to podcast, but Adam's not here for that. He's here to talk about Carolina football in our two-a-day segment. It's easy to start with Sam Howell, right? We can all say Sam Howell is Heisman Trophy candidate, the straw that stirs the drink, all the thing. Who's the second most important player on Mack Brown's team this year, Adam?
I think it's probably Jeremiah Gimmel back there at linebacker, because Carolina's going to have a lot of young linebacker. They're going to have a lot of young defensive players. They need somebody to kind of tell them where to go. Chess Surratt's been so good at linebacker, and I think that we've kind of forgotten about Gimmel a little bit. But I think this year – a lot of folks are going to realize how good he's been and how good he can be.
You know, like Wes said, Sam's going to get a ton of hype. So I'm going to bypass Sam for the most part. We'll have plenty of time next month. Actually, 1 month from today when the ACC kickoff gets cranked up. And, of course, we'll have it covered here on ACC Network. Every minute we'll cover it right here. So I'm going to go a different direction with you, Adam. The backfield. I mean, North Carolina lost two dudes. I don't mean guys that played. and started and produced. I mean, dudes, these guys were great, great players, right? So what's the next step for the Heels in the backfield?
Well, I think it'll start with Ty Chandler, the transfer from Tennessee. I think there were times last year, especially maybe the first half of the season, that Carolina's talent at running back made the offensive line look a little better than it was. But then I think by the second half of the year, the offensive line was coming around. Stacey Searles has done a great job with them, Carolina's offensive line coach. And I think maybe the first half of this year, it might be the reverse. It might be the offensive line figuring out how to make the backfield look maybe a little better than it is. The running backs look a little better than they are. And then I think by the second half of the season, you've sort of sorted out who exactly is able to contribute at this level. Keep an eye on true freshman Caleb Hood, because he looks nothing like a true freshman. He looks like he's ready to step in and play. And I think maybe by the second half of the year, the Tar Heels can figure that out. The problem is, first half of the year, really tough from a schedule perspective.
Well, that's the other thing we're going to get to here in just a second. When we mentioned, you mentioned Gimmel on defense, we saw Tony Grimes kind of get thrown in the fire a little bit last year in the secondary, a guy who should have been playing his senior year of high school football in Virginia. When they canceled football, he showed up in Chapel Hill early. But at the end of the year, Adam, he had kind of emerged as a future star in the secondary. Why do I get the sense, and we talked to Phil Longo last week, we're going to replay the interview here in just a few minutes, but why do I get the sense that maybe Carolina is undercover a little bit about what they may be on defense? Fox comes back. Both Foxes are back. You mentioned Gimmel, Grimes emerging. It just seems like there's a little more there than people are thinking about.
Well, and you see the clip right there of Trey Morrison. Carolina's got some players on defense, and I think the way that Mack Brown has built the team is, last year it feels like the first 11 were pretty good, and then there was a little bit of a drop-off. But as those of us who were around for Mack Brown 1.0, and I know y'all were, remember, when Carolina really got good was when that next 11, there wasn't much drop-off, and that made the practices so much better, and that made on game day, if somebody goes down or if you just need a little depth and need guys to be fresh, you can put in some members of that second 11, shuffle them in, and you don't lose a lot. Feels like that might be where the Carolina defense is getting close to that point this year. You mentioned Tony Grimes. He had a great maybe tail end last quarter of the season last year. Well, this year you're going to add Storm Duck back, who was probably one of Carolina's best defensive players, had to miss 10 games last year. He's who Carolina thought was going to be the shutdown corner. That ended up being Tony Grimes. Well, now if things go well and if both play the way they think they're capable of playing, now you got two shutdown corners, and then you're feeling pretty good about things.
Adam, staying on the defensive side, I think one thing that must improve for North Carolina, if they're going to become a championship-caliber team, and they've got the capabilities of doing it, they've got to create more turnovers. That was one of those things that last year that, hey, the offense was scoring at such a crazy rate that, you know what, you can almost get a little, you know, not necessarily sloppy, but lax on the defensive side, going, oh, all right, we'll get them the next time, all right? Well, they've got to figure out a way to create more turnovers in 21.
Absolutely. Four turnovers against NC State, two against Duke, and those were the only games with multiple turnovers forced by the Carolina defense. So I think you'll see that, of course, in the defensive backfield, but Carolina's got to be a little more productive rushing the passer. You bring back Tamon Fox. That was a great addition of a player who had the option of moving on, chose to come back. He's got a chance to be Carolina's all-time sacks leader. Not really who you think of. You know, you think of Lawrence Taylor, Greg Ellis, or somebody like that. Tamon Fox has been really good getting to the quarterback. Carolina's got to apply some pressure there and force some opposing offenses into some miscues.
All right, Adam, you mentioned the schedule. There have been big games to start seasons before, but there is something about this Friday night in Blacksburg, because Pac mentioned this, I think, a week or so ago. There'll be a little bit of desperation on Virginia Tech's behalf. The Hokies are eager to kind of, you know, move on to better football, if you will. What is it from Carolina's side that gives you pause or concern about that opener in Blacksburg on Friday night, September 3rd?
It's in Blacksburg at night, and it's the season opener, the end. It's a Coastal Division game. I think people kind of underrate how much Virginia Tech doesn't like Carolina. There's just something there, right, that they really don't like the Tar Heels. And a lot of those games have been meaningful. because they are Coastal Division games. It's going to be the first chance for Virginia Tech football fans to go out and fill up a stadium again. They've missed it. And you have to think that environment is going to be incredible and will make the Hokies maybe a little bit better than they actually are, at least for the first quarter or so when they're playing on emotion. I absolutely think that's going to be a very tough opener, but that's also a chance to make a statement about who you are in front of what will be a national audience.
You know, everybody's talked about the first one, and rightfully so. We're all excited, right? Fans in the stands. Lane Stadium's a great place for a game. But I'm going to go to the opposite end of the spectrum on North Carolina's schedule. And I know people talk about, hey, Miami's coming here. We got to go to Notre Dame. And again, Notre Dame would be a cool story, but it's a non-conference game. I think it's the end of the schedule for North Carolina that intrigues me. November the 11th at Pittsburgh, because I think the Panthers are going to be pretty good. And North Carolina's really had their number. And then the closer at NC State. We'll talk about the Wolfpack later in this show in our two-a-days. But I just have a funny feeling that game, November the 26th, it's always important because it's an in-state game. But that game may have even more juice this year because I think NC State's going to be really good. And I expect North Carolina to be really good. That game could have a bearing on who in the world showing up in Charlotte, North Carolina. So the first one's cool. But I think the tail end, those two road games are the key, the big key for North Carolina.
Just skipping right over that November 20th game against Wofford. That'll be a big one, too.
I just did. I absolutely did.
I do think that game at Pitt, it's on a Thursday night. I think Carolina is required by law to play at Pitt on a Thursday. That's the only time that game can possibly be. So I agree about that one, and I agree about NC State because I think the Pack will be – if nothing else, worst case scenario, they're going to be just good enough to be in position to be playing for something on that Friday after Thanksgiving. And you go into Carter-Finley Stadium, speaking of teams who've got a little something for the Tar Heels, NC State certainly knows that Carolina drug them up and down the field last year. So I do think – but the good news is, Pac, if those two games are as important as you say they are, that means Carolina played really well in the front maybe two-thirds of the season – in order to make those games meaningful. If you're in that position, that's great. That's good news for the program.
I think North Carolina will be in a good spot when they roll in November at Pittsburgh. My expectations for them is that, you know what, they're going to be living up to the hype. I think they're going to be that good. But at Pitt and at NC State to close it, grab your popcorn. That's where it's – hey, that's money time, man. We'll see where that thing goes. I can't wait. Again, kind of like this week. That's kind of how I feel about North Carolina football this year. I think they've got the pieces in place to take it to the next step. And I really do. Mac's done a great, great job.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Adam, real quick here. We noticed in the back of your shot here that you've got with us this morning, there's some sort of Papa Shot thing that's got some ESPN logo at the top of it. What in the world? Where do we get one of those for Packers Basement?
That's how I get loose for the Packer and Durham show. I go back there and do a little Papa Shot, just get ready to make sure my mental acuity is clicking on all aspects. And you got to hit 30, 35 in that Papa Shot in 30 seconds to feel good about yourself before the day starts.
My idea of a Papa Shot's a little different than that to get ready for the show, but you know that's just me.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are already severely testing me with Chester D because I mean you're really taking a big gamble that my dogs are able to see that on the screen and not absolutely lose their minds. I feel like you've tested them first thing on a Monday morning.
Hey, you know we had Kurt Weiler on last week from Tallahassee. His dog wanted to get in a shot. Kurt just couldn't figure out a way to get him on his lap. So. The more dogs, the better. So if the hounds – unleash the hounds, Adam. Let's go. We're all for it.
There you go. Adam, thanks. Great to see you. Be well. See you soon, I hope.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy Omaha this week. Some big ACC games out there. And looking forward to talking some more football with you as we get closer to August and September.
And by the way, load up on that cash. Don't spend it because you got some tuition payments coming this fall.
Load up on that money, Adam.
Go Commodores, I guess.
Yeah. Vanderbilt doesn't have tuition coupons last time I checked.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Lucas, sending one to Nashville. Uh-huh. Yeah, they charged the full rate out there last time I checked. Yeah, Adam, exactly you can read his work at GoHeels.com. He and Jones Angel host the Carolina Insider podcast available where you download podcasts. All right, sit tight. We talked to Phil Longo, Carolina's offensive coordinator, late last week. Great visit. Fascinating on all fronts. Sam Howell in particular, but also about, you know, kind of the continuity of Carolina's program as it relates to replacing Michael Carter and Javonte Williams. Coach Longo is next on Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life. We'll continue the theme of North Carolina football. And don't worry, NC State fans, today's your day, too. We've already bragged about your baseball. We'll brag about your football. Yeah, we'll brag about your football coming up later on in our two-a-days. But Phil Longo joined us last week, Wes. He was really, really good. Outstanding.
Yeah, he was. He's done a marvelous job, obviously, at Carolina. And as they get ready for another year here, it's a little more than Sam Howell. In fact, when we visited with Coach Longo last week, we started out by saying, "Oh, how's it feel just to bring recruits back to campus for the first time in 15 months?
It's been 100 miles an hour since June 1st. The floodgates open. And, you know, as I told you earlier, I can't wait till the 27th gets here. As long as we get all the guys we need, and that's the way things look like they're going, then this will be a really good month for Tar Heel football.
Coach, here's the deal. We're going to spend a lot of time between now and Friday night, September 3rd, talking about Sam Howell and all these new pieces that he's got around him in the offense. But outside of number 7, maybe the most important pieces coming back are those 5 guys lining up in front of him?
Well, they're certainly the most veteran-oriented group that we have. And, fortunately for us, I think we're getting to a point where we're going to have 8 or 9 that can play for us up there. So we'll be able to keep them fresh and roll through more guys than we have had the luxury of doing in the past. So that's going to be the staple for us up front. We have a really good tight end room coming back. And obviously, we've got Sam coming back for his 3rd season. So we're going to see new faces and new names at the receiver position and at the running back position. But it's just like any other team. You graduate or get some guys drafted and you move in the next group of talented kids and you try and go get it done with those guys.
Phil, what did you tell Sam Howell in the offseason that, you know what, you're a terrific player, all that great stuff, we get all that, but what did you tell him that he needed to work on?
That's probably the most common question I get, and I think Sam and I sat down and, you know, I said this at the end of last year, I don't just give him the plan anymore, you know what I mean? He's so intelligent. We sit down and collaborate and talk about things. What do we need to get done? And the 3 things we came up with between Sam and I, we wanted to continue working on his hip flexibility to improve his mobility athletically out on the field. You know, that was one of the physical things. I wanted him to take the final step leadership wise, which is complete ownership over the offense and the team and be the 3rd year veteran that he is. And so he's demonstrated the ability to do that in the spring and in the summer. He's running all the workouts and taking care of things he needs to do from a leadership standpoint. And then the last thing is, and this isn't completely to get him ready for the NFL, it's also to expand his knowledge so that he can make better decisions during some adverse defensive times this year. And that is, we're studying, much like we started last year, we're calling our offense against all the defensive fronts and coverages. We're going to take each team in the NFL and call an offensive game against those defenses like we did the New England Patriots yesterday. And so that just in an effort to expand his knowledge in the game of football.
What did you learn from that bowl game as far as positions like wide receiver, running back, which will obviously be emphasized into the spring, into the fall, and so forth moving forward? What did you learn from that?
Well, it was an interesting approach in terms of preparing for A&M because we had 2 players opt out previous to the 2 weeks that we had in preparation for the game. So you plan accordingly. And, of course, at that time we thought Javonte Williams was still going to play. And so our game plan revolved a lot around Sam and Javonte. And then after a week, Javonte opted out, and so we had to restructure the game plan and go about it a completely different way that last week heading up into the Orange Bowl game. And, you know, it thrust greater responsibility on some of our younger kids. And, you know, a great example of one of those younger guys is Josh Downs, you know, who caught two touchdown passes in that game. And I think we've got, as I said, a number of young, talented running backs in our room here and some younger, very talented receivers in our room here. And we're going to have to lean on those guys. And so we did. You know, we increased their reps, and obviously their role is much bigger now. And we're never going to be able to replace the experience we lost until these kids play for a couple of years. But from a talent standpoint, I think we feel pretty good about those two rooms.
Michael Carter and Javonte Williams were as good as it gets, Coach. I mean, we all watched that a year ago. You get a transfer in Ty Chandler from Tennessee, who for the Vols a season ago was as good as they had in all-purpose yardage. How do you plug and play a guy like Ty Chandler coming to Chapel Hill this year?
So, Ty, first thing I've got to tell you is we lost two good athletes, but we lost even two better people. I mean, tremendous character guys. And Ty is very much from a demeanor standpoint like Javonte. You know, he's kind of no-nonsense. He's a little quieter. You know, Michael was so outgoing. Javonte came to work, went to work, and did a heck of a job. And Ty has done a phenomenal job this spring. He looks like a veteran on the field. He's polished. He's played in the SEC. And we're going to benefit from that experience. And you know, he's the veteran in the room right now. He didn't know the offense any better than anybody else in the room. If anything, he knew it less. And so he is out there just about every day throwing with Sam, working on the mesh stuff and the run game, and has done a tremendous job assimilating himself into our program. And, you know, this spring's been so long. I feel like Ty's been here for 4 years. He's done a good job, and I think he'll surprise a lot of people with his production this upcoming season.
Phil, I'm sure Max talked to everybody, players, coaches, any media, everybody else. The expectation level, the outside noise, as it's called, is never going to be greater than in Chapel Hill in a long, long time. And again, that's the good news, that people expect you to be good, and you're obviously making progress going 1,000 miles an hour. From a mental standpoint, what has been the message to the players as far as, hey, guess what? People are going to be bragging about us a lot June, July, August. You're now in an interesting spot. People expect North Carolina to be ACC champs into contention, maybe college football playoff, top 10 preseason, all that stuff. How do you handle mentally the outside noise this summer and into the fall?
You know, a few things come to mind when you ask that question. I mean, Mack Brown, you know, we're working for the best guy in college football. And one of the things that makes him so great is, you know, and I say this sincerely, he is just phenomenal at getting out ahead of issues. You know, whether it's racial issues, whether it's the vaccine and the pandemic, whether it's disciplinary stuff, whether it's a growing issue that is going to rear its ugly head on campus, anything like that. He's always so far out ahead of it. He's always thinking way out ahead of a lot of these problems. And at times, I think you might have a player or a coach say, look, why is he talking about this in the team meeting? And then a month from now, it hits and it's a big national topic. And I think our players have been much more, and our staff has been much more prepared for some of these things that have come down the road, including the attention that we're now getting because of some of the past success and because of the expectations that people have for our program now.
It's great to have Phil make his debut on the show last week, and he's probably sleeping pretty good right now because that team right there in North Carolina, is prime for a special year. But we'll see how this thing plays out.
Yep. Exactly right. That's why the Coastal is the Coastal, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, exactly right. When it boils right down to it, that's why we write the chapter every year. We have no idea. It's the Coastal Division of the ACC. All right, sit tight. Best and worst of the weekend coming up next as hour number two. Monday's Packer and Durham, presented by New York Life, is next.
Packer and Durham.